Shop the Sherwin-Williams Spring Sale and get 35% off paints and stains March 13th through the 23rd. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Welcome to Morning Invest on this Tuesday. Clayton Morris here. So glad to have you to the only progressive business show on the interwebs, where we cover progressive issues that affect your wallet. Coming up on the show today, we're going to talk the stimulus. Mitch McConnell is holding firm to his $500 billion stimulus plan, and there are two major roadblocks. So he took to the floor of the Senate yesterday in a little whiny fit of rage. Tell you what Turtle Boy had to say about the upcoming stimulus and if it will pass the way that we think it might under that bipartisan agreement. One country managed to pass stimulus, though. Yeah, wasn't much hand-wringing at all. They managed to pass a $700 billion stimulus package in a short amount of time. That country, not the United States of America, will tell you where that was. President Trump continues to make everything about him, even while handing out a Medal of Freedom to somebody. It's amazing. It's amazing how he's able to do that. And President-elect Biden picks a black man to run his defense department. The mainstream media wants you to congratulate him for picking a black man to run the Pentagon, focusing on the color of his skin rather than his record on war. But we won't. We will dive into that. Just gets worse and worse over there at the Pentagon. I'll tell you about that on the show today. Grover is in the house, passed out. As David said, he's the true star of the show. And we got a birthday, and there's Ava, because she's home from school today. And they're all home from school today, because it's like that Christmas time where they have those days off for school when you don't know why they're off. So anyway, the kids are home. I told them to be quiet this morning. And happy birthday, David. David's in the control booth, our producer extraordinaire.
Thank you very much.
Big birthday today. 5-0.
Yep. 5-0. Wow. And I was downstairs, wow. And I was like, I was making a vlog, and I was like, do I really feel any different? And to be honest, I think most people are like 40 is where you actually realize, oh my gosh, I'm getting old. Mm-hmm. But I didn't go through that either. Right. I've not had a birthday where I was like, where it affected me. So I guess that's good.
Yeah, that's good. Right. Cause you love what you do. Mm-hmm. And I think if like every day you're like, oh man, this is a slog, man, how soon can I get to retirement? You know, but you love what you do and every day is challenge and fun. And I'm the same way. When I turn 40, I'm like, yeah, okay, just another day.
Yep.
And no, I think that's what it's so all about. Wisdom. Now at 50, you probably have so much wisdom about life, right? And you're like, you know what you want to do. You know, when someone invites you to this type of an event, you're like, no, I know myself. I don't go to those things. Like when you're in your 20s, you're like, sure, I'll go to that.
Yeah. You put yourself in situations that you weren't really comfortable with. And yeah, now it's like, even with dating, it's like, I knew exactly what I wanted and I wasn't settling. And you know, so it's just like, you just learn that it's important to go after what you want rather than taking what you're given.
I have a friend, a mutual friend of ours. I won't name his name, but a really good friend. And he recently went through a divorce and he's like, you know, I'm now like middle aged. He's like, now I know what I want. He's like, I want to date a Korean woman who speaks English and teaches yoga. he's like zeroing in. Like, that's exactly what he wants. I'm like, okay, man, like you be you. That's exactly what you want.
Yep. Go for when it. You get specific like that, then it's easier to find.
Right. Hey, today's show is brought to you by our friends over at Birch Gold. You know, as an investor, you've got to pay attention to what's happening in that stock market right now. You've got to pay attention to what's happening to the U.S. dollar. And if you want safe harbor assets that have been tested for 4,000 years, precious metals, putting your money into smart assets like gold and silver. And that's what I do over at Birch Gold, our friends. So you can get a free gold kit right now. And they're actually giving away free silver with your initial deposit. Now, the initial deposit for buying your first round of actual gold, they will send the gold to your house. This is not fake gold. This is not paper gold, by the way. People will invest in gold in the stock market. No. This is real gold. Gold coins sent to your house. Their minimum investment is $5,000. They will give you free silver on top of that. But maybe you're not ready for it yet. That's fine. So go there right now to morninginvest.com/gold and get your free gold kit and just learn more about the process of buying gold and silver. You don't have to buy anything yet. Just get your free gold kit. It's totally free. Morninginvest.com/gold. Grover is a big fan of gold. It's his color. Let's talk about the stimulus this morning. Thought we'd wake up with some positive news and have some great information, some major progress moving forward on the stimulus. And it looks like we've taken about, I was going to say 2 steps back. It looks like 10 steps backwards, thanks to good old Mitch McConnell, Turtle Boy Mitch McConnell. So he took to the Senate floor yesterday in response to the latest round of negotiations on this $908 billion stimulus package. I think he just doesn't like to be upstaged. And when these bipartisan group of senators came forward, 5 and 5, Republican, 5 Democrats, came forward and put together this package, they said, this is a good framework, right? We've got money in here for state and local governments. We've got some money for insurance. We've got PPP program money. We've got unemployment benefits. No, there are no stimulus checks. But there's a lot here, right? There's money for transit, transportation, buses, trains, hospitals, schools. There's some good stuff in this thing. That's not great. I certainly don't think it's great, but it's something. So what ended up happening? Well, Mitch McConnell seems like he's living in, I don't know, August of this year. Did you know, by the way, today is National Pretend You're a Time Traveler Day? It is, actually. Look it up. So maybe he took the flux capacitor, hopped in the DeLorean, and went back to the summer when he was still peddling this idea of a narrow targeted stimulus, very, very small stimulus package, when he has half of Wall Street telling him that we need a big stimulus package. The American people are suffering. I mean, just look at the new numbers out this morning. This new study came out this morning from LendEDU, literally arrived right before the show started. 53% of adult Americans are worried about going into tax debt next year due to the coronavirus and economic impacts. 76% of those who've been laid off due to the pandemic. 70% are worried they may owe more due to receiving unemployment benefits. 78% are worried due to drawing funds from retirement accounts. Congress needs to step in and correct some of these things right now, some of these inequities, making sure that people aren't worried about having to pay taxes on some of this relief funds. All of it needs to be addressed. And the American people, as they head into the holiday season, are watching all of these programs about to collapse and about to run out. I mean, the list is endless. If you watched our premiere last night, we went over the list of them. Unemployment benefits run out. And by the way, if they don't get something passed like immediately, there will be a gap. So there will be a lapse when you don't have your unemployment benefits. And by the time they pass something, you might have a few weeks where you're not receiving anything. And it seems highly likely that's going to be the case. Student loan deferment, eviction moratoriums, if they've been extended just through the end of January, but that's about it. On and on the list goes. So Mitch McConnell gets to the floor of the Senate yesterday and takes the time to talk about this narrow targeted stimulus and takes time to attack Democrats. Of course, there's been enough attacking back and forth going on about this. But listen to Mitch try to describe what could pass the Senate right now. We could get this like $500 billion package done in Congress right now if Democrats would only concede everything.
4 weeks. These three urgent issues are issues where there is almost total bipartisan consensus. No real disagreement whatsoever. In fact, the framework for a small targeted relief package that I put forward last week, something which Democrats quickly attacked, would have resolved all three of those subjects.
Yeah.
All three of them.
All three.
The targeted Republican framework extends unemployment insurance programs that will otherwise expire. It creates an entire second round of the Paycheck Protection Program for the hardest hit small businesses. And it lays the groundwork to distribute the vaccines that appear to be on the horizon. Check, check, check.
So that's all I want to do. Just this little dinky thing. So PPP, what was I saying?
Democratic Whip is right to recognize these three subjects are especially urgent because they are especially urgent.
Oh, now. I love that now there's a sense of urgency, Mitch. Nothing like waiting till the end of the fourth quarter to come up with a plan. All summer, people have been telling you that there's urgency here. Your Federal Reserve has been telling you that there's urgency here. The data don't lie. And end of December, right before Christmas, now that's when we're going to focus on this. There's urgency here. Yeah, this is news to you.
That's why Republicans have been trying over and over to get them passed.
Yeah, Republicans. Man, you guys have just been... You're God's creatures, really. Like angels, really. It's going to come out and say it. Republicans are working, you know, so hard. You just got your wings. I mean, it's Republicans, I've not seen you take a day off, quite honestly. All summer, you've just been tirelessly trying to get a stimulus package done for the American people. You're angels.
That's why Republicans have been saying for months. But Speaker Pelosi and the Democratic leader should let Congress get outcomes in all the places where we already agree, rather than holding everything hostage over their most controversial partisan demands.
Controversial partisan demands. And what are the two roadblocks? So what are the most controversial partisan demands?
State and local businesses, state and local governments, municipalities. I mean, we did the story 2 days ago now, I think, or yesterday on the show, where I talked about all the different transit that is now having to shut down, all the buses, train routes being reduced by 40%, subways, et cetera, all sorts of transportation infrastructure that affects low-income Americans trying to get to the job that they're holding on to, probably going to that job, and that job hasn't provided proper PPE to take care of them in the first place, but yet they're getting on that bus to try to put food on their table. That's controversial. That's a partisan controversial piece of this legislation. And by the way, it's already been approved by Republicans, Mitt Romney and others, on this bipartisan panel. Transit money, state and local money to help these governments that are bleeding capital, that can't pay for basic services and having to lay off first responders, fire departments, police departments. You know, something funny happens when people can't pay their bills, they can't pay their mortgages, we don't get property taxes paid. And property taxes, so many people are behind on property taxes now because they can't afford to pay the mortgage. And property taxes go to fund state and they go to pay schools, firefighters. You cut that stuff, that's exactly what happens. That's partisan. Now, it is true that certain states certainly are running much higher deficits and have bigger problems than others. New York compared to Arizona, California compared to others, sure. But when it comes to these basic COVID debts that they're running and having to close down certain essential services because they have no money, that's when you step in, Congress. But nah, let's just play politics. Let's stand on the Senate floor and do that. Here's Nancy Pelosi yesterday coming out saying we need to pass something immediately.
We prepare for the new Biden administration. We must also move swiftly for a new coronavirus relief bill. We want the Republicans to come back to the table, the White House, the leadership, whatever, 100 for 2 days in a row, over 100,000 cases were reported. The imperative to act could not be greater. Over 9.5 million, nearly 9 million people infected, nearly 250,000 deaths, and tens of millions on unemployment. Again, I'm calling on the administration to come back to the table.
So come back and start negotiating. So the two key roadblocks, again, are state and local government issues. And then, of course, the coronavirus protection for businesses. This is the top priority for Mitch McConnell. Article after article, news report after news report overnight, citing that is the main issue. Once again, Mitch McConnell wants to make sure that these businesses have liability protection in place, so that if they don't take care of their workers properly, then they can't be sued because someone gets sick and dies, or someone gets sick from coronavirus. because they didn't put in proper distancing, proper PPE, and other protocols inside the business. He wants liability protection for businesses. Now, part of this negotiation had it in there for about 6 months. So there would have been a 6-month moratorium on suing a business, et cetera, if you got sick. He doesn't like that. John Cornyn particularly doesn't like that. So when you put those two things together, as Cornyn says, there's either going to be none or both of those, or both of those that are going to be provided for. My hope is that we'll do both. We'll get state and local government, and we'll get liability protection. These are the two points that is holding this entire thing up right now. We now know that Larry Kudlow has said that President Trump will sign a bill. But it's amazing, like Mitch McConnell's rolling back. It's like going back in time to $500 billion. Using the same phrasing that he was using at the, during the summer. Literally, he's like pulled this right out of his old, his like August hat. Where he said, you know, this drop all or nothing tactics that Democrats are doing right now. We need to stop this drop the all or nothing tactics by Democrats.
But month after month after month
after month,
it is the Democratic leaders who have said that no relief whatsoever can pass, no consensus items can become law, unless multiple controversial areas where we don't agree are resolved to the Democrats' liking.
You know, he'd be great to read my kids a children's book at night to put them to bed, wouldn't he? They would fall right asleep. They'd be out like a dead carp, wouldn't they?
That's why the Democratic leader had every single Senate Democrat vote to filibuster a targeted COVID-19 relief package back in September and again in October. That bill would have taken care of small businesses, unemployment insurance, and vaccine distribution months ago.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have addressed any of the looming massive issues like evictions and rental assistance. I don't know why there's not a bigger push and a bigger discussion for this. I don't understand. I'm just struggling to understand how there's not a bigger discussion about rental assistance in this country, mortgage assistance, when so many of these individuals are going to lose their homes. So many of these people can't afford to pay their rent. How can you live with yourself? I just don't understand. What data are you looking at? Have you not been hearing from your advisors? Do you live in such a cloistered world that you don't understand? Are you not hearing from Wall Street how many people are in forbearance and are unable to pay their mortgages right now? I mean, just look at these data points, right, that I brought up yesterday, and how many people are now so far behind on their rent. These people, look how far back people are on their rent right now. This is, unemployed renters. $5,300 is the average right now of how far behind people are on the rent since March. What's going to happen? They're going to have to pay their rent at some point, or they're going to be evicted. They'll be out on the street. They will be homeless. Oh, and by the way, do you see this scary story? You know, David, do you know what trench foot is? Have you ever heard of trench foot?
No, I have not.
It was an affliction that affected soldiers in World War I in the trenches. And
From being in the water, like because it was so moist or something like that?
Yeah, it was so moist and their feet were constantly wet. They would get nasty and it was awful. It was just like a hygiene and trench foot is now back. These homeless people are out in the elements. Trench foot has resurfaced. Who thought suddenly we're talking about like Oregon Trail style stuff again, little Sally has cholera. Little Sally has a consumption. Now we got trench foot to deal with from World War I, from homeless people living on the streets in this country. Doctors are seeing a rise in trench foot.
I even heard mention in some of the homeless areas in California that the environment was conducive to bubonic plague, even.
Yeah, that's popped back up again because of the rats. People living under bridges. California particularly, these tent cities that have popped up underneath overpasses.
Which if more people become homeless, that's going to be, if it continues to grow, I mean, that could be another real, you're going to be, you know, giving a virus or a vaccine for COVID, meanwhile, the bubonic plague is active again.
Right. Like, all right. It's like back to William Shakespeare time. Bubonic plague is back. Well, just as we swat one fly, we've got another one popping up because Congress is such a failure. So McConnell holding firm on this $500 billion package, he says, we just need both sides to finally do what members of Congress do when they're serious about wanting an outcome. Drop the all or nothing tactics. Drop the hostage taking and make law in the many places where we have common ground. I'm convinced it helps when you really don't care about people. If you really don't care about people, if you only care about your rich benefactors, like Mitch McConnell does, then it's very easy to just sort of sit there on your hands. Wouldn't it be amazing to see leadership from Mitch McConnell? To say, look, I understand, you know, Republicans, we as Republicans don't like to spend a lot of money. We don't like to run up massive deficits, but we are in a catastrophe. And the scarring on our economy will be long-term if we don't do something, which is what you've been hearing from Jerome Powell and other members of the Federal Reserve. He could grab that microphone and say, we're going to toss out all preconceived notions about we're going together through this. We're going to pass a massive stimulus package to make sure we see our way out of this. I'm calling on each leader right now to remove all of the pork and the crap that's in here and really get serious. Rental assistance, landlord assistance, universal basic income for the rest of the year like Canada and Europe, $2,000 a month. Unemployment benefits, not $300, which is currently on the table, $600. Keeping people out of poverty. Wiping away student loan debt. Everyone, would you hear it? You'd hear like, I don't know. I don't know who would not applaud that. I don't know who would yell boo from the gallery with that kind of a monologue. Figure out how to deal with it later. But we need it right now. So this scaled down measure he's going back to once again, we'll see later today whether or not it seems like he really just put a big wrench in this, in the works. John Cornyn says, Republican, I think McConnell had made clear that the state and local money is tied to this liability protection. So there's either going to be none for both of those or both of those that are going to be provided for. My hope is we'll do both. A convoluted sentence on his part. But he's basically saying, look, we're not going to get one without the other. So Democrats need to compromise. Liability protections for businesses. And then they'll get your state and local government money. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this in the comments. What do you think about this? I mean, this is amazing. When on a day when you have another country being able to pass stimulus, Japan rolls out their $708 billion in fresh stimulus with an eye on post-COVID growth. They've been in a recession. So $708 billion, they're able to get that through very fast. I mean, and think about 700, just to give you some frame of reference, right? They have 125 million people living in Japan. We're quibbling over $500 billion in the United States with basically triple the amount of population in the United States.
Well, and the thing is, Japan's already been
economy in the world.
Japan's already been paying 100% of the lost wages all along. This is a new one.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, great point. I mean, they've been providing full salaries and for people who've lost their jobs during this pandemic. Look at this. Japan at the top of the list. 100%. This is the money, the wages that are currently subsidized by the governments due to COVID. Japan, 100% for small businesses and 80% for large firms. You know, in the United States, we'd do it in reverse, wouldn't we? Large firms would get 100% like they have been.
Mm-hmm.
And small businesses would get nothing. Or, you know,
small, like small businesses would get loans if they were approved for it and then have to pay it back.
Right. Large firms get a you know, free bucket of money and they don't have to pay it back. Look at the Netherlands, up to 90% subsidized due to COVID. Germany, 87%. France, up to 84%. Italy, 80%. United Kingdom, up to 80%. Canada, up to 75%. Plus, you know, and all these countries are, you know, giving like $2,000 a month in stimulus money. United States, wow, so proud, aren't we? So proud.
Well, but if we did everything that these other countries are doing, we wouldn't be able to be in war in 9 different countries. Come on, Clayton.
That's right. Yeah, we have to pay for our wars. So that's why we can't help our citizens. We've got to keep lining our defense budget contractors, our defense contractors. That's why we do it. It's a perfect segue, by the way. So President-elect Biden, he's been filling out his cabinet, angering progressives along the way, making them happy in some regards and anger in the others. Well, here's one that'll should make progressives pretty angry. The headlines, of course, are Biden picks retired General Lloyd Austin to run the Pentagon. Yeah. So the media are all excited, right? Because retired General Lloyd Austin will be the next Secretary of Defense. And that, look, now at least we don't have Michelle Flournoy, who was the, you know, the bloodthirsty Michelle Flournoy, which was predicted. That's not going to happen. But now he will become the first black chief of the U.S. war machine. And we should be thanking him and applauding this huge step forward for diversity. You know, when progressives have called for diversity, wanted his cabinet to be more diverse, progressives, I don't think that they mean just the color of their skin. What I think what they're really calling for is progressive policies, really progressive, which is getting out of these foreign wars, not being in bed with defense contractors, not funneling billions of dollars to the Pentagon when we could be helping the American people and investing in our infrastructure, you know, transforming our countryside, infrastructure, broadband, new roads, bridges, education systems in this country that don't leave people behind. Solar, wind, become a leader in sustainable energy, geothermal. I think that's what I believe should be progressive policies, right? Medicare for all. Free public college, like they do in other parts of the world, with a higher standard of living. Reducing violence. Decriminalizing drug crime. They're decriminalizing drugs so that it doesn't become criminal. Someone gets caught with a bag of marijuana, spend 15 years in prison for it. Instead, do what Portugal does. Get them help instead if they need it. And take the police off of focusing on those things. Those are the progressive things I think we're talking about. Ending fracking, our dependency on fossil fuels, polluting the atmosphere, etc. That's what I think, right? But instead, the common media refrain is that, oh, we're just talking about putting a woman in there, putting someone with a darker color skin in that cabinet position. It's a win for progressives, right? Under Trump administration, it's, you know, all white people, except for HUD, Ben Carson. That's what I think they think they mean, but that's not what they mean. So the mainstream media are reporting that Biden has selected former General Lloyd Austin to be the next Secretary of Defense. And it was amazing to watch all of the news articles yesterday. I don't know if you saw any of them, David. How many have you, anybody watching right now in our chat who also saw these headlines flow through yesterday? It was all like, you know, Biden's, you know, break barriers and selecting the first black man to lead the Pentagon, breaking down racial barriers. And that will, of course, be the headline. Never mind the fact that this guy has an amazing record of war, and he's on the board of Raytheon.
Yeah, let's break down the racial barrier so we can go bomb more brown people.
Exactly. So we feel good. We've got a, there's a black guy running the Pentagon. So as a head of Central Command in Austin, he actively campaigned to resurrect the Pentagon's hugely terrible program, the program of trying to arm rebels in Syria to fight ISIS. And in 2014, he backed the immunity for U.S. troops from war crimes prosecutions by the government of Afghanistan during a time when we're ramping up all kinds of incredible drone strikes that were wiping out citizens left and right. We, you know, got analysis now over the past week of President Obama's drone program and what a disaster it was for civilian deaths. And when asked about it, he said, oh, it was one of my, yeah, you know, I thought we really tried to do a good job. And I think we did a pretty good job. And his ham-handed answer about it increased it by like 400% deaths of civilians with our drone strikes. And then moved to decriminalize or protect these people from prosecution for war crimes. How does that look when we try to go after other people for war crimes? We won't adhere to those same laws. He helped spearhead, of course, the Iraq invasion. One of the most terrible wars in American history. One of the biggest quagmires and messes in American history. So let's put him in charge of the Pentagon. Thanks for all of your good work in getting us into Iraq. And he is the member of the same private equity fund which invests in defense contractors. The same ones as Michelle Flournoy does. And Secretary of State Tony Blinken, the pick for Secretary of State by Biden. They make their money investing in hedge funds that invest in defense contractors. Do you follow me here? So you're making money off of the procurement of weapons, bombs, and other things the American taxpayer is funding, and you're making money off of that. You're making money off of the war machine. Here's your new. We should all be excited about this because he's black. Don't pay attention to the record. Ignore it. You watch MSNBC, you will not see them talking about that. I challenge any of you watching right now to find on mainstream media tonight, if you watch it, watching the networks, CNN, MSNBC, they're going to have all of their military analysts out there. I think this is a great pick.
Well, and the military just got a over $700 stimulus for him to get a fresh start with. He's going to go in there with a nice new budget and have all this money to just... Okay, we've got all this money, so who can we bomb? How can we spend this so that we get the same amount next year?
That's always the key, right? And that's a great point. So I brought this movie up before, which is the movie Falling Down with Michael Douglas, one of my favorite movies. It's a Joel Schumacher film. Before he destroyed the Batman franchise with his putting nipples on a bat suit. But with George Clooney. But anyway, when he actually made good movies back then, that movie's great because at one point, Michael Douglas, he's just like had it with society and government lying to us and all of this crap that we're like spoon fed, right? And so he's like, I think he was driving or walking and there's like a construction site. And he's like, why is all this traffic stopped? What's going on here? And there was no one working. But we all just accept these like construction sites, right? There was one road in near where I grew up called the Road to Nowhere in Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia near Reading, Pennsylvania. And it was being worked on for 20 years. They still had like traffic cones up and stuff. It was never, but they still had it blocked off. I'm like, when is this ever going to get completed? And it literally stopped. It was called the Road to Nowhere. They finally ended up connecting it to Allentown, Pennsylvania. Nevertheless, just we all take this kind of stuff for granted. Right? Like no one has to answer to us. We're citizens. So he gets out of his car and he goes and he looks at this construction site and he can't find anybody. And he sees like some guy sitting down there eating a sandwich. And he's like, what is this? What is going on here? He's like, I've never seen you guys working on this. What's happening? And the guy's like, yeah, we're working. We're just on our lunch break. He's like, no, you're not. This has been the same way that it's been for months. I might be misremembering exactly how this unfolds. Anyway, I think he pulls a gun out on the guy, I think. And he gets the guy to admit that they're not doing anything on this project. They're literally using this as a way to increase their budget for next year. It's like a fake road project.
Yeah, that's the scene where they're shoots the rocket launcher down the sewer drain.
Oh, right. He shoots it into the sewer drain and blows it up. And he's like, now you've got a project to work on. But that's the point, right? You get whatever, $200 billion a year to work with. And if you go under your budget, then Congress looks at that and says, ooh, let's decrease it next year. So everyone wants to hit that number, right? And go above it. So that next year we need to increase it to match it. So yeah, he's on the board of Raytheon, which gets tens of billions of dollars a year from you, the taxpayer. The top ones are Northrop Grumman, Boeing, Raytheon. They get tons, billions of dollars, and he's benefiting from that. He's benefiting from this war machine. Do you think he's going to get us out of these foreign wars? He's a board of director for the war profiteering corporation Raytheon, where he went directly after he left the military. Raytheon, for those of you that don't know, spends millions of dollars a year actively lobbying the U.S. government to advance policies which are beneficial to building bombs and weapons, directly responsible for their growth and their bottom line, which means if you are Raytheon, if you are a member of this group of people who are now being installed in the Pentagon, you want to see an expansion of the American footprint around the world, build more bases, put more troops around the world, procure more aircraft carriers and jets that we don't need, spend, spend, spend. The percentage of wages currently subsidized by governments due to COVID. Japan, which doesn't have a military, right? After their little thing that they tried in World War II, you know, taking over the world didn't work. That was part of our agreement. So no military. It's amazing what happens when you don't spend all that money on bombs, right? 100% for small businesses, 80% for large firms. We'll take care of you. Plus healthcare. The United States at the bottom of this list. Because we love war. 0%.
That's why those people are still walking around with smiles on their faces, because they don't have the stress we have. I mean, I'm sure they have other stresses for sure, but like if you can take away financial stress from people, other things are like life stress is so much different. But when it's financial, because it becomes deeper and deeper and deeper, and it becomes something that you almost can't get out of, you know. And so that's different than if I wake up and, you know, I got the stress of my TV show is, or my internet's out, you know. Like I'd much rather have that stress than a financial burden.
No, I think you're right. It's a great point. I mean, it was for me growing up one of the more debilitating things in my life, like financial stress. You know, like I grew up hearing, you know, money doesn't grow on trees. We're not the Rockefellers. We can't afford that. So I grew up with a lot of negative associations with money. I believed that I wasn't worthy of acquiring it. I believed that it was something that was separate from me. So guess what? Never got it. And it went massively into debt. I made all kinds of stupid mistakes because I just didn't understand. I wasn't financially intelligent. It wasn't until I was in my late 20s that I really started like being serious about it.
Well, then they kind of, I mean, you talked about
understanding it.
They preyed on you in college, right? I mean, the credit cards. So it's like when you're first going in there, like you don't know about finances and credit and all this other stuff. And they make it sound like you're getting free money. And here you are, you're struggling to try to eat and all this other stuff. So, you know, what are you going to do?
It is the leading, I mean, it's such a major cause of stress and anxiety. I mean, I would lay up at night worrying about it, thinking about it. I mean, I still think about it. I mean, I still, you know, you want to make sure that your family's taken care of and that you can have a, you know, roof over your head. How is the greatest country in the world, the biggest country, biggest economic country in the world, unable to do this, unable to take care of people? I'm showing you why this is, why Mitch McConnell is focused on these other things. And then you have these people who are so far behind in rent, $5,000 behind in rent.
Well, and the thing is,
1.3 million right now.
They are helping people. They're definitely helping people. It's just the people that don't need help. They're ignoring the people that do right, to yeah, help the people exactly. that don't.
And it's all this idea, I think, of this like trickle-down economics. But you and I both know that that's not true. And as I've shown you before, what's going on right now? Well, the amount of public debt, or the amount of private debt from these companies, is corporate debt, excuse me, that is piling up. So these corporations now are taking on extraordinary amounts of debt at 0% interest. They're not hiring anybody. They're not investing in their company. They're not like buying machinery or buying computers that could be built by Americans, et cetera. They're not investing in themselves. So these companies are taking all of this government money from you and they're buying their shares back. They're enriching themselves. And then pretty soon what's going to happen is they're going to dump all of those shares. And it's you, the 401k owner, that doesn't know that your portfolio has this company in it that's about to be dumped by their CEOs and their executive board. You're going to take a bath on it. And you're going to wonder what happened. Oh, the economy. No, it wasn't the economy. It was Wall Street. It was these corporate elites that take all of this money and enrich themselves.
Well, and think about how flawed the system is. How flawed the system is, where they'll give you a credit card if you've got bad credit, or you're, you know, and they'll give you like 29% interest. But if you got good credit, you get 3%. It's like it's completely backwards. I mean, there should be a fixed rate of some kind, because it's like every part of this system is made to hurt the people who can't afford it.
It's predatory. I mean, there's only one word for it. It's predatory. It's exactly what it is. And, you know, good for Elizabeth Warren for making that a part of her, like, part of her career, trying to go after these predatory lenders, trying to go after these predatory credit card companies. She's not going to be a part of the Biden cabinet. Joe Biden says that he wants her to stay in the Senate where she can be more effective. So she won't be in charge of labor. She won't be in charge of anything where she could really maybe have some, you know, stronger teeth to go after these companies that prey on these people. And it keeps them in a cycle of poverty. You know, that's the thing. When I get these smug Republicans and so forth that want to say there's no systemic racism, there's no systemic class system in this country that keeps people down. Are you kidding me? You just laid it out. I mean, talk about those interest rates. That's a perfect example. It keeps people in this cycle of poverty. And it keeps people like this. I mean, how are these people going to get ahead? Millions of people, rental households where someone lost a job during the pandemic, are now behind an average nearly $5,400 on rent and utilities.
Well, and think about those people.
This data is from the Federal Reserve, by the way.
Well, and these people, if the stimulus is not huge, nothing like a $1,200 check is not going to help those people. $600 extra a month is not going to help those people, because if they're that far behind on rent, they're doing that because they're struggling to buy food. They're struggling to buy the things that they need. So that a stimulus would have to be huge in order to help those people, or they'd have to just like say you don't owe that back at all and help the mortgage owner, or, you know, whatever. Like that, it would have to be a huge stimulus. And what they're toying with right now is not going to do that.
No, $1,200 is crap. I've said it before. I mean, that's why I was calling for that $2,000 a month. There's the Emergency Money for the People Act by Bernie Sanders and Ed Markey and Kamala Harris before she was selected as VP, but she supported it. And it would be retroactive back until March of last year. Congress will never do it. They're happier to just line the pockets of defense contractors. And when I said, you know, when Joe Biden earlier this year said nothing is going to change, nothing is going to fundamentally change for you rich people, that's basically what he said. That's how he addressed them, Wall Street. Nothing's going to fundamentally change. He was right. Here we go. If you look past the color of his skin, nothing is changing at the Pentagon. A board member of Raytheon, a war profiteering company, Raytheon, makes its money off of war, is now chosen to run the Pentagon. Oh, but he's black, so we should just look past that. Just like when Michelle Flournoy was the alleged choice. She's a woman. We should just look past it. There are some, there's, you know, glimmer of hope though in the Biden administration for some of these progressives. I was particularly excited about Janet Yellen being chosen for Treasury Secretary. That is a really good sign. One of the most powerful cabinet positions. She will work lockstep with Jerome Powell for additional stimulus. So she really sits more firmly in that progressive camp, which I'm excited about. So there is, I don't want to leave you with some, you know, all bad news, but at least on the monetary policy side, I think we might be going in the right direction. I'm upset that he didn't choose some other individuals who are more deficit hawk focused. But at this point, look, deficits, can't really worry about deficits at the moment, sadly. You know, I would love to go back to the 1994 era when Bill Clinton listened to Alan Greenspan and worked with a Republican Congress to pass a balanced budget that led to a surplus. We expect it from our states, right? All states must have a balanced budget. All 50 states must do it constitutionally. But we don't expect that of the federal government because we expect them to lend. It's a debt economy, of course. So there you go. There's absolutely,
absolutely zero oversight over the Federal Reserve. And also, I mean, once that they remove backing of the dollar, the gold standard, like the Federal Reserve does what it does pretty much in secrecy and has carte blanche. Like they pretty much run the economy with no oversight.
Yeah, they're not elected. The Federal Reserve claims that it answers to Congress. Like we handle fiscal policy. We don't do monetary policy. We at the Federal Reserve can't lend money or spend money. We can only lend money. We're a borrowing entity. But that might change. I mean, look, I really grapple with this. I think about the different ways that this could unfold. You know, I'm an investor. I'm an entrepreneur. But I'm a progressive entrepreneur. So I care about people. I care ultimately about how society is run in our country and making sure that people have health care, not at the expense of your business. You know, that businesses should run roughshod over people. I believe businesses are the lifeblood of our economy, small businesses particularly, with the tax benefits and the ability to affect a community. There's enormous benefits to starting your own business. I think it's better than, you know, working for somebody else. We know that the tax code reflects that as well. So I sort of grapple with this idea that, like, what if the Federal Reserve under Biden administration steps in with Janet Yellen and says, look, we are going to initiate a digital Federal Reserve currency, the digital now, or the it's called the Fed Now digital currency, like a cryptocurrency. We are going to provide $1,500 a month to all Americans that would qualify under a certain threshold in a Federal Reserve currency account. Like, what would Congress do? They say they have authority over the Federal Reserve, but they don't act like it. And I don't know what exactly they would do to pull that back. Right now, the Federal Reserve is breaking its laws. They are buying up corporate junk bonds that they are not allowed to be buying up. Under congressional rules, they're not allowed to be buying this stuff up. But they are. And they've announced they're going to continue to do it through 2024. That's why Wall Street is exploding. They're buying up all of the crap that Wall Street doesn't want. They're not allowed to under congressional rules. Can't they set up a digital wallet for all of us and help those that need it most? Stranger things have happened, and it wouldn't shock me at all if that unfolds over the next few months when after President Biden is in and fully sworn in. Meanwhile, there's this story on the environment. It's like President Trump on his way out the door just like wants to tear it down, you know? Like, he reminds me of, you ever go to a baseball game, you know, during when the ground screw comes out and they've got those like giant chain link things on a string and they pull them around the dirt to make it all clean and nice. It's like Trump's got one of those attached to him and he's just like running through the government right now, like knocking stuff over on his way out the door. So what am I talking about? I'm talking about this. Yesterday, the Trump administration has rejected tougher standards on soot. Who's pro soot, by the way? How many of you in the chat right now are pro soot? Do we have any people that love soot? So it's one of the deadliest air pollutants.
I mean, of course, coal miners love it.
Of course. Right. Oh, yeah, they love it. They love getting the black lung, pa. I got the black lung, pa. Trump administration on Monday rejected setting tougher standards on soot, the nation's most widespread deadly air pollutant, saying that the existing regulations remain sufficient, even though public health experts and environmental justice organizations have pleaded for stricter limits. The EPA retained the current thresholds for fine particle pollution for another 5 years, despite mounting evidence linking air pollution to lethal outcomes in respiratory illnesses, including COVID-19. Documents obtained by the Washington Post show that the EPA has disregarded concerns raised by some administration officials that several of its air policy rollbacks would disproportionately affect minority and low-income communities. Once again, when it's low-income Americans, low-income communities get shafted. Its decision announced on Monday that the EPA maintained that the Obama-era levels set in 2012 are adequate and protective of human health. The scientists there recommended lowering the annual particulate matter to between 8 and 10 micrograms per cubic meter, citing estimates that reducing the limit to 9 could save between 9 and 34,000 lives a year. With the stroke of a pen. So what it does is, it's the measures are about like 2.5 micrometers in diameter, or 1/30th the width of a human hair, can enter into the lungs and the bloodstream, causing inflammation that leads to asthma, heart attacks, and other illnesses. Andrew Wheeler, the EPA administrator, says, this comes after careful review of the most rigorous scientific evidence. I got multiple recommendations, he said. Every scientist can take a look at this and reach a different conclusion. So he's erring on the one. Wouldn't it make sense to err on the side of saving lives?
Not during a pandemic, Clayton.
Still. Oh, yeah, yeah. Of course, I forgot. Still, Monday's news, the Washington Post writes, came as a gut punch to people like Bridget Murray, whose neighbors in the historically black neighborhood of Pleasantville in downtown Houston have long struggled with air polluted by nearby petrochemical manufacturing plants and a bustling highway. The community erected six of its own monitors starting last fall to cover the neighborhood's 3 square miles and detects pollutants spewing into the air. They studied a year of data after they put up these monitors to collect it. And by the way, the Environmental Defense Fund, if you're ever thinking about like donating money to, I've donated money to the Environmental Defense Fund over the years. I think it was the first charity I ever donated to when I was broke and had no money. They found that the concentration in the air of fine particle pollution known as soot was close to the upper annual limit. But the EPA got their own data, their own scientists. Here, these people pulled money, got money and help from the Environmental Defense Fund because they're saying, look, we're dying here. We can't breathe. All of this soot from the petrochemical plant down the street, which you're allowing to just pollute willy-nilly, and this overpass here, because you won't reduce carbon emission standard. You won't increase carbon emission standards. We're dying below this in this area. Not to mention the floods and other crap you get because of global warming in Houston. They set up their own monitors and find that it's close to the upper annual limit of the amount that you're allowed to breathe. Murray has suffered headaches when the air quality worsens, permissible under federal standards that allow daily concentrations to spike up to 13 micrograms. Other residents in this town of Pleasantville have endured various lung ailments and cancer. They want to know, why is everyone getting cancer here? They said. So we went looking for answers. We wanted to move from that kind of anecdotal posture to actually collecting some data, said Murray. Very little is being done to help those who are exposed to that pollution on a day-to-day basis. There you go. It's President Trump on his way out the door, making sure he he's a fan of soot. And here's my last favorite story of the day. President Trump yesterday, you know, they do those Presidential Medal of Freedom. They choose who they're going to give out the Medal of Freedom to, like a great American, right? And didn't he give the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Rush Limbaugh also, by the way? So I don't know. But anyway, he puts his big ribbon around. You're invited to the White House. You fly in. You go to the White House. You bring your whole family. It's a really amazing day, right? You're chosen to get this award by the President of the United States. So wrestler and coach Dan Gable was at the White House yesterday getting an award when the president was putting the thing around his neck, said, you know, he's won 141 matches consecutively without a loss. He only won one. He only lost once. He's like, it's kind of like me. He's like, I've won two elections in a row. I'm 2-0. I'm perfect. He makes it all about him. How do you, in a ceremony like that, you're talking about this guy's unbelievable record as a wrestler, you're giving him the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and you manage to talk about, you won one election, by the way, Mr. President. I don't know, you know that you lost. You still haven't come to that awareness yet, when today, actually, all of the states will have certified their election results and pick their electors, the Electoral College, to move forward. So that ship has sailed. And by the way, the Georgia court system has again thrown out a third consecutive time and certified results in Georgia. Sorry to disappoint you. But again, turning that around on yourself again? I won twice. I'm 2-0. I'm perfect. I'm like you. So then he puts the medal around his neck. And then this is like incredibly bizarre moment. I don't know if you saw this.
Mr. President, one more question about the inauguration. Thank you very much.
He just walks out.
Anything on Bill Barr, sir?
He just walks out. And he leaves the guy standing there. He's like,
I don't wear a toupee.
He goes, he's gone. He's gone.
Mr. President, one more question about the inauguration. Thank you very much.
Anything on Bill Barr, sir?
Thank you very much. I got to go.
I mean, to be fair.
Thanks for hanging out.
To be fair, to have him hang out and answer those questions in front of all those kids, those people. I mean... You know, I think the media should have probably focused on questions about that. I kind of get that. I mean, I would be a little, you know, reluctant to stand there and answer questions like that if I had those people in there as well, you know, kids or whatever.
But the way that this works is you tell reporters, hey, this is going to be I forget the name of it. You know, we covered Washington for so long, but there's different names of it. Is it a quibble, I don't know, where the reporters just get together. It's just a press op. They don't talk. They're not, there's no interviewing the president. So one reporter just randomly throws out a question as he's leaving there, but he doesn't hold a press conference. So he's not holding a press conference. He's there to award this and that's it. He's going to, you know, take some photos and thank you so much. And he just like walks away and he's like, okay, what do I do? It's just such an awkward moment. I agree. I mean, you know, if you're there to interview, I always get uncomfortable when they have like a head of state, you know, you've got like the Prime Minister of Canada or something sitting there and they're doing like a joint interview and you'd hope that the reporters would ask about relations between Canada and the United States and blah, blah, blah. And did you discuss anything about how you've been able to handle COVID so well and the United States hasn't, you know, those kind of questions. But instead they sit there with like the Prime Minister of Canada sits there while the press is like, we want to ask you about that Access Hollywood tape, you know, and they go off on that. And it's like Canadian Prime Minister's like,
you know, it reminds me of the time that Robert Downey Jr. sat down to promote a movie with, was it?
Yes.
And he starts asking questions about his dad. And Robert is just like, what is this? It's like, you know, I know the media needs to get these answers and stuff, but there's a time and place to do that, you know? And
right. Yeah. Anyway, any good questions here before we wrap up?
Yeah. Do you think people carrying drugs, even if it's, well, this is a good segue. This was not planned to talk about this right after Robert Downey Jr. But do you think people carrying drugs, even if it's only enough for one person to distribute, need mental health care? No, they are dealers and need jail. It's talking about the. I mean, we've learned prohibition does nothing. And that's the problem. I mean, you've created a system that's conducive to people trying to feed their families with the only means they have in certain areas. And not all people selling drugs are do anything criminal other than that. And it's only criminal because
right.
the system created it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the thing is when, so someone, someone wants to go and get marijuana or get whatever other drug they want. Is it the job of the police? You know, if they're not harming anyone, if there's no crime involved in it, meaning there's not violent drug crime associated with it. By the way, it helps eliminate all of that. I mean, look, Colombia is considering this now. Imagine what would happen in Colombia if they decriminalized cocaine and heroin. Well, what would that do?
Just look at like prohibition of alcohol. Like, look what that did. That created whole crime syndicates, and look at how many people died, you know, moving alcohol and stuff. And they should have realized that during that this prohibition on anything does not work.
Right. Exactly, because people are always going to find a way. Always going to find a way, and you make it harder for people to do things, and then it actually makes it worse. You know, you can't get medical procedures, can't get Medicare medicine. You end up going like people who, we've seen these road trips that people take like in buses over the border from America into Mexico to get certain medical procedures because it's cheaper, or they go up into Canada. There's buses that drive out of Arizona and throughout California and go into Mexico and get procedures done. Eye surgeries, you name it, because you make it more difficult to do in the United States. The same thing is true of drugs. The same thing is true of alcohol.
Yeah.
I mean, just look as an example of what Portugal did.
When I was in Arizona visiting my dad, I went across the border and I think we went to Juarez or so. I can't remember where we went. I think that might be Texas. But anyway, we went over the border somewhere down there and I got a tube of this stuff that I needed for a rash that I had that was like $6 there, but it was like $300 here. You know, and the things like still look at like drug cartels and stuff. Drug cartels wouldn't exist if the drug war was over. Like all this stuff, this whole infrastructure, the whole prison system would be completely different. We wouldn't be incarcerating like what 65% of incarcerated people are not violent offenders. They're drug offenders.
Right. Yeah. They literally got caught with something on their person, or they were distributing it to a few people, you know, and okay. Did anyone get hurt in the process? And so what these other countries have realized is that, okay, maybe that person doesn't need to be incarcerated, but would be offered help if they need it at a facility that helps people get off drugs. And then it frees police up from having to worry about it. Imagine that. We got a super chat here from
yes.
Essential Hard Worker.
He says, I'm a plumber, and I really wish people would realize the endless opportunities of jobs, careers, money, country, independence. There is endless prosperity, endless jobs, and so much opportunities. I think he's talking about if things were legal, I would assume. Oh, clean energy.
Clean energy. Yeah. I mean, we know that the amount of jobs that could be created with clean energy and with sustainable energy in this country far exceeds the amount from fossil fuels and fracking, and on the list goes.
Judy thinks that our senators and representatives need to work for free. Let's see how long they would last without money. Good luck with that though.
Yeah. I mean, look, they make these salaries. I don't even think they care about these salaries because they just get so many perks. I mean, they just get taken care of, you know, all the questions is like, how did you manage to acquire that particular piece of land on that waterfront that was owned by this corporation that has been very cozy with you over the years? Well, that corporation gifted this land to your super PAC. You know, it's like, this is how this stuff works. You need a house built.
When I talked to Ron Paul, he was called Dr. No in Congress. And he said it was almost every single week he'd have lobbyists in his office wanting to sit down, and what they do is they go, and these guys have endless amounts of money, these lobbyists, they go to the congressman in their offices and they sit down and they make these backdoor deals. And they say, we'll put this much money in your super PAC or whatever it is, your campaign, if you do this. And most of them do it. And so they make, I mean, Nancy Pelosi is an example I always use because she's become a 100 millionaire while in the Senate, in Congress. Like, 100 millionaire, you should not, like, they should be living slightly better than us, I guess, at $175,000 a year. That's a pretty decent income, you know, right now. That's that's plenty for some to live on. But, you know, they're like getting backdoor trader deals and stuff like that. And it's just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, then not to mention they get their speaking engagements and people pay them $100,000. Let's pay $100,000 to Colin Powell so he can come and talk to us over lunch so we can hear how he duped us all into you know, going to Iraq, tricking us with weapons of mass destruction. How did you do that, Colin? We're going to pay him $100,000. Tell us how you got us into war.
And Mitch McConnell only gets about $8,000 a speech. That's...
Who'd want to listen to that guy speak? Yeah, can you imagine?
I was saying, hey, we're bringing in Mitch. Everybody, please drink a bunch of coffee.
Yeah, Mitch is coming in today. Oh, who are we going to have speak? We're going to have Bill Clinton come in speak, one of the greatest public speakers ever. Are we going to have Barack Obama come in, another great public speaker? Are we going to have, I don't know, who else? Oh, we got Mitch McConnell.
Months ago. Senate Democrats blocked it.
Do they serve the salad yet?
Democratic leader would allow it. The three things that the Democratic whip mentioned just yesterday.
Did they serve the salad yet? Because I'm hoping after my speech, if we're going to have lunch together, I hope they bring out some more breadsticks.
Do not put him on after lunch. That's for damn sure.
Oh, man, you would be, the whole room would be asleep. You have to do what David Letterman's studio used to do, which is turn the air down to 55 degrees in his studio just to keep people awake, because they'd be like, they couldn't fall asleep in that. You know, you'd be like wide awake. That was the whole point of it. If you make it nice and warm after a lunch and have Mitch McConnell speak to you, it's like slipping into a warm bath. Oh, man. Well, much love to all of you guys. Thank you so much for tuning in today and watching our live show. Are you new here? If you are new, please say hello. Subscribe to our channel and smash that like button. Subscribe to the channel just by hitting the little subscribe button. Turn on the little bell notification because we do this show live every morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time. So you'll receive a notification when we go live. And that is how we roll. Thank you guys for joining us today.
That was accidental. I had my thing on.
And happy birthday, David.
Thank you, man.
Happy birthday. David is a producer extraordinaire, 50 years old today, December 8th. Happy birthday.
Yeah,
happy
and I do birthday. Tell people my birthday is bittersweet because it is the same day that John Lennon died. And so I generally have my little Beatles fix at some point during the day just to kind of pay my respects to John.
That's sad. I didn't realize that about you. And then I mentioned in passing, I forgot to bring it up and talk about it. Yeah, I'm a huge Beatles fan. Huge.
Yeah, I actually have a Beatles, like all their album covers right here on the wall next to me.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. One of these days, we're going to have to grab our guitars and get together and jam some Beatles.
Yeah, we'll have to do a live stream. We'll have to do a live jam session. Well, maybe until I get better at it, we'll do it just for you and me. But then... my son and I, we went to London last year. First time, cause I'd never been to England. And we went to Abbey Road, studios, and it was pretty cool. He and I have a photo. It's my, actually you can see it right here. It's my, come on, all these notifications. So it was blocking it. Let's see if you can see that. Oh, there you go.
Hold it. Yeah, there you go.
Oh. Oops.
And that's...
That's Abbey Road.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there. Oh.
That's awesome.
Yeah, walking across Abbey Road with my boy. I do Sunday Beatles Sunday because I... You have a t-shirt from Abbey Road?
No, I have a t-shirt that has Darth Vader and three stormtroopers walking across the...
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
We Growing up in Philadelphia, I used to listen to 94 WYSP, and there was a guy who was a Beatles expert. He was one of the few guys that would get access to go into Abbey Road's vaults and be able to get incredible audio things he could play on the show, Sunday with the Beatles, I think, or Sunday Beatles Brunch in Philadelphia. I don't know if he ended up, it was a show that ended up becoming syndicated or what, but I used to listen to it out of Philadelphia. If anyone remembers the name of that, please tell me in the chat if anyone has a memory of this. But Sunday, it was like a 2-hour show, and I used to love it. We listened to it like on the way to church or whatever, and it was like 10, it was like 2 hours, like 10 a.m. to noon or something. And there would be like deep cuts and interviews, and he, you know, then they play normal album cuts as well from different Beatles records and stuff. But then just like, here was an outtake from the BBC sessions, you know, and he'd play those things that you just would never hear. You never got to hear it until they started releasing some of that stuff on CD, you know, the BBC studio sessions and other stuff. But he had access to it. And that's awesome. I loved it. Oh, such
breakfast
a great.
Breakfast with the Beatles is what Dolores is saying.
Breakfast with the Beatles. Yeah. I forget who hosted it.
It was called Behind the Music, Mark says.
No, it was on radio. It was a 2-hour live. It was a 2-hour show on radio out of Philadelphia, 94 WYSP, the classic rock station. Yeah, and I just don't remember the name of the guy that hosted the show. But now there is on Sirius XM. If you're a Sirius XM radio subscriber, there's the Beatles channel. And on the Beatles channel on Sunday, they do a, he does, there's a Breakfast with the Beatles show on Sundays now with, and I forget the guy's name. Peter Asher?
Peter Asher, yep.
Who was
Channel 18.
He was an engineer, right? For the Beatles. He was a studio engineer, I think, for the Beatles. He was in a lot of these sessions like with them. Too.
He was a musician as well, I believe.
Yeah, I think he was a session musician or something, but he so he knew all, like, and he does the show now. And so you can listen to that on Sirius on Sundays on the Beatles channel with Peter Asher. And he is fantastic. Like he's like, yeah, this, you know, this time John said this and I didn't believe it when I first heard this, I thought, well, you know, he has all of this context with him and George Martin and the Beatles and all of
yeah,
this.
He's very knowledgeable. Great,
yeah. So that's, I still, every Sunday, I always ask my kids, what, it's Sunday, what do we listen to? I'm like, Beatles. All my kids know the Beatles.
That's awesome.
So, a huge Beatles fan.
What if you had to pick?
Got a hairband.
If you had to pick one Beatles song as your favorite, what do you think it would be?
That's, I know, so that's a hard. Tough one. You know, I have to say, if I pick my favorite Beatles song, I'd have to say "Get Back."
That's a good tune.
But I mean, there's so many. I mean,
mine are the last three on Abbey Road. The Sun King,
yes.
The Mr. Mustard, Polythene Pam, and She Came In Through the Bathroom Window. That whole progression, like, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. Like, I still will put on my Sonos and just bury myself in that album. It's what I named my Chihuahua after.
It's so good. Abbey.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
it's funny about that section is Ringo. I remember Ringo explaining in an interview how that came together. They had these like little pieces. They just didn't know what to do with. They were kind of like, what do we do with these like three pieces, you know? And instead of like throwing them away, they actually sonically, they worked together, like kind of coming together as three little pieces that flowed into each other. And it was brilliant. I think it wasn't it George Martin's idea?
Yeah.
To put them together like that, I think,
yeah,
and engineer them together. Yeah, I love that as well. And then to end on that last note, that last C chord, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just like resonates, boom. Yeah, yeah. Eleanor Rigby is such a great.
Yeah, I love the strings in that. Yeah. That's just a. Ugh. Here we go. I'm gonna go listen. I'm gonna start my John Lennon memorial service early today.
Yeah. On his birthday in the newsletter, I wrote a John Lennon quote. I want to actually make it part of the show. I want to have, because I feel like with this show, because we sort of piss a lot of people off, calling attention to things, you know, that aren't popular. I love this John Lennon quote. Being honest may not get you a lot of friends, but it'll always get you the right ones. And I would love to make that sort of like the tagline of our show. You know,
mm-hmm.
like if you watch our show, you're not going to see this, what we talk about, you know, on CNN or MSNBC or these other places. You know, we're going to cover the stories that you're not going to see other places. Might be a little uncomfortable. We might piss some people off. Might get some thumbs down on our videos. That's fine because you've been spoon fed. But hey, at least we'll get the right audience, right? The mm-hmm. right friends and the people that subscribe and are channel members of our show. They get it. And that I love that quote. So anyway, by the way, on that day that John Lennon, or the same day, my parents rushed out and bought the Double Fantasy album that had just came out.
Yeah, it just.
So here, you know, what's amazing about that is that story just breaks my heart, because here he was like trying to come back. You know, he was like, he went to, was it Puerto Rico? He was spent like 2 months on an island to like write that album and like get back to his roots of music. And he mm-hmm. comes up with this amazing album, right? And it's like, oh my God, John Lennon's back. Like Watching the Wheels Turn is on that album, right?
I'm just sitting here.
What else is on that album?
Watching the wheels go round and round.
That's on there. There's a couple of amazing songs on that album. And
Jealous Guy's on there.
Yeah. So he releases that album and then he doesn't get to enjoy the, you know, so my parents rushed out and bought that album. So I still have an unopened vinyl of still in its wrapping. Of Double Fantasy from that day, sitting over on my record shelf.
Dang.
Anyway,
that stuff's cool.
There you go, Little Beatles.
I would just love to just touch that album.
Yeah, do it virtually. I'll hold it up for you. Yeah. Anyway, much love to all of you guys. Thanks for watching. Thanks for a little Beatles walk down here on David's birthday. Happy birthday again, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks to all of you for joining us. We will be back here tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Till then, be kind to yourself and be kind to others. We'll see you next time, everyone. Bye now.